Next, we will move on to charter schools. This is charter school updates. This is for information. The charter school office has provided via a written report prior to this evening. Mr. Leroy Travers, Director of Charter School Office, is online this evening to provide any further updates. Mr. Travers, do you have anything else for us?
I do not, but I'm prepared to answer any questions you may have.
Are there any questions for board members for Mr. Travers?
I have a couple of questions. In taking a look at the requirement for Great Oaks to have 148 students coming this September, I noticed that their current enrollment is sitting at 135 with an additional 31 applications in their system. Of the 135, how many students will be graduating from Great Oaks this year? So in other words, how much do they have to make up in order to reach that 148?
Yeah, so that that figure actually does not include the graduating students. Graduating students are automatically removed from that figure before it's reported to us.
Okay, so that if all 135 then do return for the next school year and all 31 are accepted as part of the application process, then they'll easily meet that 148 number?
Correct, yes. They and that number has actually gone up a bit since my report. I believe it's what does the report say?
In terms of what they need or what they have?
What they have.
Right now, it's indicating that there are currently 135 students with 31 additional applications.
Sure. So they're at 137 as of 2 days ago.
And then one question regarding condition number 16. I noticed that the way the condition is written, that Great Oaks will report monthly to the department about each unlicensed or uncertified staff member. It indicates that the condition has been met, but what I'd like to know is that have those people that were identified completed the certification and licensure process? Are they currently licensed and certified?
So there's no change since my last report as far as that goes. The condition of reporting has been met, however.
That poses a concern for me because I know specifically there was one or two individuals that have for multiple years been unlicensed and uncertified. And I know that during the CSAC process, it was indicated that these people would be taking the praxis, I believe as early as December of last year, and that there would be indication after and planning after if they had not passed the praxis. Do we have any further information on that as to whether or not they passed the exam or if they're being given interventions in some way?
Yes, so the school is working on continuing with some interventions to work to have them pass the praxis. There are two, just trying to be mindful of personnel issues, but one has taken the praxis and is going to continue to take the praxis until they pass. And the other, to my knowledge, has not yet taken it, but is due to take it in the near future. And then another individual, one of the two is actually working on the alternative to the praxis. The name is escaping me right now, but working towards the alternative as well. So they are actively working with those individuals to ensure that they become licensed and certified. Their goal is to get to 100% is their goal.
Thank you, Leroy.
Sure.
Good evening. My question is about condition number 5. As I read the condition that on April 1st, they would have an enrollment of 119 students, and yet now they have 135, 31 additional applications in their system. I'm just curious as to What changed? What did they do that they weren't doing that they were so quickly able to meet this metric and then the way it looks even surpass it and be on track for what's going to happen? What has the department done in conjunction with the school to kind of change what's going on?
That's quite a long history of Great Oaks. But just to kind of wrap it up in a nutshell, there's been a long history of struggles with enrollment. That their enrollment has certainly ticked up this year over last year, and their number of applications has gone up this year over last year. And you know, they're doing a number of things, community outreach. A part of it is just time between their former reputation and now. But a lot of community outreach, trying to change the culture within the building, and with, of course, with support from the department.
Thank you.
Sure.
Any further questions for Mr. Travers? Well, thank you, Mr. Travers. Have a good evening.
Certainly. Thank you. You too.
Next is regulations, Professional Standards Board regulations. It is for discussion or action. Dr. Linnea Bradshaw, Executive Director of Professional Standards Board, will present two regulations for information. Dr. Bradshaw.
Thank you for allowing me to present. First off, we have 1539, which is health education. It is being revised to incorporate the new 91-day in lieu of student teaching pathway requirements. Those are found in, I believe, 4.1.5. And in addition, a new section 4.1.4 was added to add a requirement of 30 hours of professional development for any applicants who do not have at least 6 credits in health education. The reason it was added is that Delaware's health education workforce in general, in the beginning of their careers, lacks preparation in this area. There are no health education teacher preparation programs in the state and only one physical education program. In addition, the majority of Delaware's health and PE teachers do not take individual praxis tests for each certificate, but a combined health and PE praxis, which allows them to get both certificates with one test. And so a passing score on that test is able as possible to achieve both of those certificates and without in-depth knowledge in either one. And so it has been an issue identified at the department for a long time. And so that requirement was added to help remedy that that issue that has been seen. Are there any questions?
Dr. Bradshaw, this is Wally Rushing. Good evening. I am curious about the availability of the the professional development that seems to be the way to bridge the gap there. What does that look like in terms of in this niche of education? Where is that type of education provided? And is it any barriers to being able to achieve that for the population of teachers that this would impact?
So there should not be any barriers. This is PD. This is professional development that is currently available through the our PDMS professional development management system in the state. And so it currently exists. It is out there. It is free for current educators. We envision it as if someone has passed the praxis, then they would move to an emergency certificate until those 30 hours of professional development are finished. And then they would receive the standard certificate. And so they're currently there in the system. And like I said, free.
Can't get much easier than that.
So, I mean, the regulation states that it's 30 hours of professional development if you do not have at least 6 credits in health. And, you know, at the board level, they had a conversation about the equivalency of 30 hours and 6 credits, which would be more like 90 hours, but we didn't want it to be a barrier. And we know that 30 hours is what we have currently uploaded for educators to take. So that's how that landed.
Thank you.
Linnea, I've got a question. In taking a look at this,
could you turn on your microphone?
I think it is on. Maybe if I move it closer.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay. In taking a look at this, I guess what concerned me was that it was putting an additional burden on somebody who already holds one content area standard certificate, that for a lot of our other certificates, all a person needs to do is to pass the praxis and they're good to go. They can attain that certificate, where according to this, if I pass the praxis for health education, which would verify that I have the content knowledge for health education, then I've got to also take the 30 hours or 6 credits for health education. And that requirement doesn't appear for any other certification area. And I'm afraid that's going to perceptually be, well, why are you requiring more for those people when somebody that's looking for some of the other certificates just has to pass the praxis?
So there are a couple reasons for this. And this obviously is open for public comment at this point, and we will find out at the end of the month what public comment has come in regarding this. So in most other areas, you really cannot pass the praxis without content. And indeed, in most curricular areas, most people with a college degree have 6 credits of something. They don't have 6 credits of every piece that exists. Obviously, as a former Japanese teacher, you couldn't pass the praxis or the ACT full proficiency exam without being fairly fluent in a language. And so this is a really particular problem with the combined health and PE praxis, to be honest, because that test allows you to be certified in both without really certifying that you do know the content. I forget exactly what the scale score is, but the raw scores on that test and the proportion of health and PE allow you to be proficient in one, but not the other, and still pass the test, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And I could understand that for the combined, but I'm thinking particularly if you had somebody who took strictly the health education praxis, where it was focused strictly on health education, and they passed it, that would seem to indicate that they possess the necessary content knowledge to be able to receive that certificate with hopefully no need for additional coursework on it.
And I am not saying I disagree, although the numbers of people who take that health education praxis are in the single digits, generally less than 5 in any given year. And I believe the passing rate is somewhere around 20%.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
I'm sorry, I kind of got sidetracked. Physical education is also being revised, and it has the exact same changes. So it mirrors all, and including the 30 hours of professional development.
Okay, are there any questions for Dr. Bradshaw? All right, well, thank you for your time and have a good evening. Next on the agenda is the Delaware Interscholastic Athletic Association regulations for discussion or action. Dave Baylor, Executive Director of DIAA, is online. We are here to approve Regulation 1040, out of season and summer athletic activities and contact. This is for action. Are there any questions for Dave Baylor? Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, everyone.
You have anything further to add to this, or are we good to go?
No, sir. I think we're pretty much good to go. It's been out there for a while. There's been no additional public comment. And the regulation is pretty straightforward regarding what the rules and regulations are for out of season coaching.
Thanks, sir. Is there a motion to approve Regulation 1040 as presented?
Mr. Chair, Reverend Powell here. Good evening, Mr. Baylor. How are you?
All right, sir. How are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. For my own edification, I'm having a challenge, although it might be straightforward, is just to kind of restate in my own mind what this the portion of the regulation to change is at 8.3.2.8, where it talks about during the summer, it talks about the camps for the schools that have attended, is funded through fundraising and other requirements. Can you flush that out for me? Because it says also for the purpose of this regulation, a team camp is a sports training camp hosted by a college or university as a fundraiser, and it goes on for one day, overnight, or so on. So I'm trying to gain a good understanding how this is perhaps uniformed across all schools where there is not an inequitable opportunity for some students in some schools where it would be pretty fair for everyone.
I think, and you'd have to indulge me on this one because I didn't really this regulation was kind of written before my time started, but I think basically what it does is outlines the opportunities for schools if they want to participate in summer camps with colleges and all, what the rules and regulations are to be to follow, that the school must follow surrounding that. And those would have to get prior approval from my office for coaches that want to participate in that. So to ensure the inequity, those submissions would have to come to my office for approval. That's our way of ensuring that it's equitable across all school lines.
So for clarification, these camps are sponsored by colleges,
yes,
or other for-profit organizations?
Yes, and for example, when I was at the University of Delaware, we would have camps. We'd have about three camps during the season, during the summer, in which a student athlete from any school is permitted to sign up and attend the camp, provided they pay the fee. And it's usually a one-day camp, and it's open to any and everyone, not school specific.
Okay, so I guess my question is, if there are students who don't have the ability to purchase admission to these camps where low income and individuals can't, how is that taken into consideration? And I know there's a certain quota for the amount of students that a coach can participate in these camps also. So I just want to kind of make sure that it's a fair, equitable across the board where individuals don't have the opportunity to participate where others do.
Yeah, and I'm not going to misspeak on this, Mr. Powell. The only thing I can say is that I can research that to make sure that the opportunity is there for all students be able to attend, provided of their income situation. So that I can look into and get back to you on that.
All right, I'd appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. Any further questions? Is there a motion to approve Regulation 1040 as presented?
So moved, Stevens.
Stevens has made a motion. Is there a second?
Mr. Kenton, second.
Kenton has second. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Ms. Smith, can we do a roll call, please?
Yes. So for Regulation 1040, Ms. Pfeiffer?
Yes.
Dr. Griffin?
Yes.
Mr. Kenton?
Yes.
Reverend Powell?
No.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Rushton?
Yes.
President Brittingham?
Yes. Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you all. And, Mr. Powell, I will be in touch with you in the next couple of days.
Thank you, Mr. Bailey.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Dave. Have a good night.
You all have a good night also. Thank you.
Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for public comment on regulations. Ms. Smith, do we have anyone signed up for public comment on regulations?
We do have a name on the list. Do we have a Marie Devine in the room? Sir, I think the problem was we had four sides of sign-in sheet names happening for the big celebration at the beginning of the meeting, and someone may have just added their name.
Okay, thank you.
So therefore, no, we have no one signed up for public comment on regulations.
All right, thank you. We'll move on to state board business. To center our work around our vision, our mission, our guiding principles, the state board has agreed to revisit these items at each meeting for those who may be attending. This information is available on our website and e-board site as well as on screen at the moment. There was an opportunity for members to provide information in written reports made available on e-board on any events or committee meetings attended since the last meeting. They are posted. Is there anybody who would like to share anything further?
I have something to say. So real quick report, real quick.
Go right ahead, sir.
So today, this afternoon here at Seaford High School, me, Ms. Smith and Ms. Stevens had the opportunity to host a small forum here. And it was our second in-person one and third overall. And I think I can speak for all three of us to say it was another success. A lot of output, a lot of great output we got from the students here, and also some of the staff and the principal as well. And one thing I noticed from this high school specifically is that the love that they had and the appreciation that they had for their principal, I thought that was really awesome to see. But all in all, it was great to able to connect with these students and hear what they had to say and the input they had to give to us. So.
Well stated. Thank you.
I'll share a couple of things. I think Ms. Smith and I have literally been joined at the hip this month in terms of various activities. The two of us on March 4th had the opportunity to share with NASB members during NASB's monthly office hours the role of the State Board in Delaware's literacy efforts, particularly focused around HQIM. And so it was a real pleasure being able to share with our colleagues in other states how we are active as part of the Plan Review Committee. Kathleen and I also had a great time last week at Eisenberg Elementary School in the Colonial School District, where we got to read to kindergarten students as part of the Read Across America program. It was a great time. The kids were just enthralled with the books, filled with questions. But the other nice thing was the principal was able to take us down to their new wellness center. And I was so, so impressed with the facility that they have, with their direct connect to Nemours, with healthcare being provided to students and parents free of charge, and with a before school and after school program, which made it easy for parents who had to be at work early or had to be at work late, that they knew that their sons and their daughters were going to be safe because they were at school. It was really, really impressive. And what the principal noted was that it had a substantial impact on chronic absenteeism. So it really, I think it's a model to look at. We were also asked to present at the annual Women Leading Delaware Education Conference last week and had a roundtable discussion prepared for building community. Unfortunately, we didn't have a lot of takers on that, so we may take that on the road to NASB at their annual conference. We'll look into that. And then finally, on the 14th, we met again with the Literacy Plan Review Committee. We have pretty much finished our work with strategic intent number one, and we will be moving on to strategic intent number two, which does have a focus on the utilization of high quality instructional materials. And then finally, again, congratulations to Gus. He did an outstanding job today with the students. I love working with you, Gus, and Kathleen as well. And thank you to Seaford for making your students available. It was a delight. It really was a delight having a chance to hear their ideas and to see what their plans are for the future and how they want to change the world. It was a great time. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Mr. Whittingham.
Yes, sir.
It's Mr. Canton. I attended my first virtually NASB Governmental Affairs Committee back on March the 5th, and after I got through the technology, whatever problems we had, I think everybody had some, but it was a great meeting. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward. It's the first Tuesday of every month, and I'm looking forward to the next one. And I put my minutes in there. I'm kind of a long-winded person, so I wrote it down. You got some morning, about 2 in the morning, you can't sleep, and it's raining. Get a glass of wine, or without the wine, just read it. Any questions, let me know. But I thoroughly enjoyed hearing issues from the other states, and they're the same as the ones we have. So it was nice conversing with everybody. And thank you for that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you for your report.
Mr. Greenham.
Yes, sir. Good. Chairman Powell.
I would first apologize to my colleagues about not submitting a written report. And I want to just thank all my colleagues who took the time, and it looks like the board is really engaged and doing a lot of great, exciting things around the state. So I want to congratulate all of the colleagues. I would like to just say that I did have a chance to meet with Dr. Laura Burgess from the Wilmington Learning Collaborative that Kathleen, our executive director, helped facilitate a conference with Dr. Kathy Denhart and I, who had done some work in the Wilmington area around learning hubs. And so we finally got a chance to meet, and we had a chance to share the new report on developmental relationships, the root of positive youth development. And it really talks about the evidence of surrounding the types of relationship for youth that lead to very positive and better youth outcomes, and how these relationships, not only in the schools, are helping, but relationships in the community in which the young people live. And so it's really based around community-based organizations and how schools and community-based organizations can surround our young people with healthy, positive relationships to guarantee school success. We heard a little bit of that tonight from Seaford, and how the intervention specialists and relationships are so key and vital to retention and attendance and school outcomes. And so that was a great opportunity. I did also have an opportunity to be a judge for the Urban Promise speech contest, where young people around the city has wonderful oratorical skills. And that was also done at three levels, the second, third, and fourth grade levels. I think it was third, fourth, and fifth grade levels. So thank you, Mr. President, for that opportunity to report.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Whittingham, I'd like to just very quickly just to share and echo what Mr. Kenton said. I was blessed to have the opportunity to represent the Delaware State Board of Education on the Public Education Policy Committee for NASB. This month, it was the first meeting of the committee for this year. I did provide in my report all of the documents that we received that kind of give a background of what the committee has done to this point and what we're looking to do in the coming year. So to echo again, Mr. Kenton, if you have some time or you need a good sleep aid and you're not a policy wonk kind of guy like me that loves reading that kind of stuff, please feel free to open it up. And it does better than NyQuil, I'm sure.
I don't think I'll be reading it too late. Thank you for the offer, sir. I don't have anything, but I do want to say at this time, thank you, Seaford School District, for what a great great time we've had here. It's been a blast. It's uplifting when we see this. We love to travel to different schools to see what goes on. We sit in a boardroom, a cabinet room, and in a circle and talk. But this is so exciting when we get out here and see what other schools are doing. FYI, for all the board members, we are at Smyrna the next board meeting. But I just want to throw that out there right now. But we're going to move to the executive director's report. Ms. Smith, do you have anything to report or update on your
I would like to defer to Mr. Rushdan if he wants to address his work on the Equalization Committee.
I'm sorry, Mr. Rushdan. I don't see you when I'm looking down there.
I know that Ms. Smith has my back, so I'm good. Good evening, everyone. Very briefly, you may not know that I one of the committees that I serve on for the board is the state's Equalization Committee, which is responsible for looking at the equalization formula that is used to allocate funds in a way that accounts for the different abilities of districts to fund their portion of public education. As you know, primarily each district is given an allocation from the state, but then the remaining portion is funded in part by their ability to raise revenues via property taxes. And one of the challenges here is the lack of updated property assessments that have lagged and created some real disparities with respect to actual market reflections of what property values are worth. So there's an active effort to go through reassessment for the first time in decades. That process is undergoing now. But in the meantime, when the Equalization Committee is looking at tinkering with the formula in any material way, that has consistently been a decision the committee has not made because of the fact that reassessments are going to have a tremendous impact on the way that the formula manifests for districts. So the committee voted again this year to freeze the equalization values consistent with the 2009 values, which has been a recurring recommendation as we wait for reassessment to occur. Additionally, in this report is a acknowledgement that in addition to the reassessment, there's the issue of whether or not the formula itself needs to be changed in any way, whether or not the formula separate and apart from reassessment should be modified to actually accomplish what the term suggests of equalization. There's currently no factors, if you will, that account for what's, populations of students that may be English language learners or the more diverse populations of students and how that impacts education. So a consultant or vendor rather has been engaged to take a look at the formula and separate and apart from the assessment issue, determine if there is other recommendations that should come out to tinker with the formula. So I know there's been suggestions that there are reports available that could serve as paper form of NyQuil. I submit that the formula, the full report may rival those other reports that have been noted, but it is available for the board should you decide to avail yourself of it as well.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Brittingham?
Yes.
Can I ask Mr. Rushton a question?
Absolutely.
What is the timeline as it relates to the report back from, I guess, the consultant regarding the systemic structure of the formula? And then what is the anticipated timeline for the reassessment of properties in the state of Delaware across the counties? And once that data has gotten back, and when you will meet again to perhaps make a disposition on that information.
As to the vendor question, Reverend Powell, the vendor I supposed to be following up with us by the summer, early fall. So we should be getting that feedback around that time. The process of reassessment is ongoing now. And there's a vendor that's actively going out and doing an analysis of properties. I can only really speak to Newcastle County in terms of that process. And I understand that reassessment should be on a similar timeline because it's a multi-year process. So the results of that should be coming out pretty soon as well.
Thank you.
I know in Sussex County, I think they're talking about 2025, and I just did receive in the mail last week some information on the reassessment, asking me questions about my dwelling. So the information's going out. I don't know how many of you received it, but it's getting out there. All right, thank you. Ms. Smith, Executive Director's report.
Thank you. Yes, you have my report. And just to highlight, the Reading Consortium is meeting right this minute, and we will continue to report out to you what their timeline is. As of now, Senator Lockman will present to you at the April 18th meeting in Smyrna and give you an update, and the final plan comes to the board for approval. The state board, according to statute, has 3 months to approve the plan. So we'll keep you posted on that. I wanted to say again, thanks to Gus and Deb for the student forum today. It really was wonderful. We got wonderful feedback from the students, and the application launch for the new student board member happens the week of April 8th in coordination with the governor's office. And President Brenningham, thank you for reading to second grade students today at Blades Elementary School. I've already been sent some pictures that I'll share with you.
Thank you. It was truly enlightening. Yeah. It's amazing how somebody that tall, that short, what tall kind of can touch your heart when you're sitting here reading to them. But thank you for that. Any questions for Ms. Smith?
Just one, Mr. President, and I'm not sure if you'll be able to answer this or if it's better for Senator Lockman when she comes before us in April. As I was looking through what was sent to the board regarding the work of the Reading Commission, one of the questions I had, I know we're going to have 3 months to disposition what they send to us, whether we approve it or deny it. Do we as a board have the opportunity to send it back to them? I'm not sure what the legislation says.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions for Ms. Smith? All right, we'll move on to the Secretary's report. Dr. Holodick submitted his report last week. Dr. Cora Scott is here this evening. If there are any questions you have for Dr. Holodick, please refer them to Dr. Scott, and she can follow up with Secretary Holodick. Are there any questions or comments that anybody needs to have answered now? All right, we'll move on to formal public comment. Time has been set aside at this point in the agenda for general public comment. Ms. Smith, is there anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, there is not.
Well, thank you. Again, Seaford School District, outstanding. Thank you. It was a blast. Do we have a motion to adjourn tonight's meeting?
So moved.
Reverend Powell has made a motion. Is there a second?
Second, Griffin.
Griffin, second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. It is 6:43 p.m. and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, folks. Safe travels home.
Thank you so much, everyone.